to Mr. Sieben.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. And before you proceed, is it Mr. Caples? Do either council have any questions before we proceed?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Sieben, you there, you may then proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Jones. Thank you. May it please the court?
Counsel.
My name is James Sieben, Deputy Public Defender here in Lancaster County, Nebraska, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. James Taylor. Initially, I think it's important to note the facts of this case are not in dispute. Mr. Taylor was lawfully stopped by the police for driving without his headlights on. He was lawfully arrested for suspicion of driving under the influence, and a drug recognition expert lawfully administered an evaluation. He admitted to consuming his prescription medication. Mr. Taylor was honest and forthcoming with the police. He gave the police, other than maybe some spelling errors, an exact list of his medications. And after the officer looked up those medications and observed him with his drug recognition evaluation, found him to be under the influence of a CNS depressant and opined that he was not able to safely operate a motor vehicle. Mr. Taylor was then subsequently charged and then convicted of driving under the influence of drugs. We are asking that this court reverse the District Court of Lancaster County, which affirmed the conviction in the County Court of Lancaster County.
Going back to the facts of the case, did your client out of lane of traffic? What?
I believe that there was some, what I think was characterized as erratic driving. But I believe the reason articulated for pulling him over was he did not have his headlights on. I think they said that they followed him for a bit and saw him.
There was testimony that he struck a curb, right?
I believe that that was the testimony. He testified that he had fallen asleep while driving, yes.
And he testified to that. He fell asleep while driving.
And I do apologize if I misstated. He either told the police that he fell asleep while driving, which was then received in testimony, or he testified to that himself. I'm unsure which way that information was received by the county court. But in any event, we're not disputing that he was legitimately and legally pulled over for violating the traffic laws. And he was convicted, I believe, of negligent driving or a lesser traffic offense. And we're not disputing that in this appeal here today. That was proven. The issues raised in this case revolve around how the lower courts and how this court will interpret Nebraska Revised Statute Chapter 60, Section 6201, Subsection 1 and Subsection 3, as well as Title 177 of the Nebraska Administrative Code. To just briefly discuss the law, Chapter 60, Section 6201, Subsection 1 states that tests referring to breath tests, blood tests, and urine tests made in conformity with the requirements of this section shall be deemed competent evidence. And then later in subsection 3, the legislator clarifies that in order for a urine test to be considered a valid test, it must conform with the methods approved by the Department of Health and Human Services. The Department of Health and Human Services then promulgates those methods in Title 177.
Before we even get to that, would there be competent evidence here of using the term of any drug, if we use that for the statute, his admissions to the consumption of those drugs before driving, even without the testing information being relevant at all?
Your Honor, I would agree that that is relevant evidence. That's why those statements weren't objected to. I think when you get down into the nitty gritty of the DUI law in Title 177 and whether or not it was complied with, and therefore whether or not the Chapter 60 sections were complied with, that's where the definition of drug comes into play. It is relevant that he admitted to using his prescription medication. That is relevant. I'm not disputing that.
I'm just asking, Isn't it possible he could have been convicted without the testing information even coming in at all?
I think that in regards to his admission, I think that there's at least some steps that have to go through. For example, if someone were to admit to consuming alcohol, there still has to be further evidence that that's what's causing their inability to operate a motor vehicle safely. So him saying, I consumed or used my prescription medications, there still needs to be additional evidence to get the conviction. So that admission in and of itself would not be sufficient.
What about the admission plus the erratic driving?
And
falling asleep, striking a curb.
And that's kind of getting into the sufficiency of the evidence argument. I think there's obviously many ways someone can be tired, causing them to fall asleep. Long day, this was later in the evening. It wasn't, 4 o'clock in the afternoon or noon. So it's possible that he was just tired. There was also a very limited and incredibly limited discussion as to what the side effects of the particular medications he took were. So there wasn't enough in the evidence that was presented to the county court that could say that it was the side effects or the intended effects of the CNS depressants that caused the drowsiness, the tiredness, and the erratic driving.
Going back to your statutory or ordinance interpretation argument, when you reference the administrative code and methods, that's not mentioned in the ordinance or the statute that the ordinance is patterned after. That just refers to any drug.
Correct.
So how do we get from the ordinance saying it's unlawful to operate a motor vehicle while under the influence of any drug to your argument that HHS somehow has the power to provide a different definition?
So two ways. Fundamentally, we know from the law that under Chapter 60, city ordinance, DUI law has to comply or be the same as the state law. The state law explicitly requires that the department draft the methods and draft the regulations to enforce these types of law.
For admission of evidence.
Yes.
But the statute that defines the offense says any drug.
And
why would that not be interpreted to mean any drug?
I would argue that would be contrary to other things that occur in the same code. Chapter 28 has a definition for drug listed in that chapter. And the fact that any drug is incredibly broad. It would include things that I would imagine people use while driving every day, caffeine, Advil, Tylenol. It would include a litany of substances, which I don't think anyone can rationally say is what the legislature wants to bar people from using.
Is your argument that if it's a prescription drug, then statute doesn't apply?
No, that's not my argument. There are some things within Title 177 that can be prescribed. Morphines, opiates can be prescribed and therefore legally consumed, but still not lawful to operate a motor vehicle. And that's why I believe a nuance between what the Department of Health and Human Services has outlined in their definitions and in their testing requirements is necessary here. Because when you have someone prescribed, in this case, what was quoted by Ms. Reason, the lab technician, as a mild CNS depressant, that's different than cocaine, that's different than oxycodone. That's why the Department of Health and Human Service regulation in this case is a necessary thing that this court should consider. To the best of my knowledge, upon those regulations being released, the legislature has not gone and rewritten any of the statutes.
Court spoken about this regulation?
The court did. I don't know if this court has addressed the definition of drug under Title 177. The Court of Appeals has in unpublished opinions. This court has addressed the second issue briefly, the second issue I brought up regarding the cutoff levels. They did that in a case called State v. Malone, which I believe was April of this year, but if I'm a little bit off, I apologize. My argument with that case is State v. Malone is not analogous to this case. The cutoff level rule by Title 177, which I think is clear, the department has the absolute authority to draft those regulations, even if the court disagrees on the any drug argument that I just stated. I think it's clear, and I see that I'm out of time. I apologize. May I finish my thought? Thank you. It's clear that the cutoff levels, the testing procedure, is something that was that they were given authority to draft, and the Title 177 specifically states that a valid positive test has to exceed the cutoff level. Period. End of discussion. Malone seems to disagree with that, but I believe that Malone is a different type of case and not necessarily of much use in analyzing a DUI case, which is what Title 177 is specifically targeting. Are there any further questions? All right, then I'd ask the court to reverse the district court remand to the count, remand with directions to dismiss count one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cables, good morning to you.
Judge Thompson.
You may remove your mask.
Oh, pardon me. Excuse me. My name is Rob Caples. I'm an assistant city attorney. I am the appellee representative in this matter. I was also trial counsel at the county court level, and this case did originate in county court, and then went to the district court as an intermediate appellate court. Was appealed to the court of appeals, and this court chose to take it from that docket. So here we are. Responding to the appellant's brief argument, there's a lot going on there and then quite a few different fragmented arguments, but all these arguments seem to lead back to the same place. And that's this seven drug argument that only seven drugs are illegal to be driving under the influence of, and that's because of the way Title 177 is worded. This court has seen that argument before. The Court of Appeals has seen it before. It comes up in the trial courts. So it's an important case to maybe close the door on, and I don't think there's much room left for this court to do anything.
Have we already closed the door on that?
I think the court has, Your Honor. I think the court did, in part by the Malone case referenced earlier. The State v. Rothenberger was the basis for the Court of Appeals ruling in an unpublished opinion, squarely on the facts, identical to this case, that any drug means any drug because the legislature deemed it so, and the administrative rules don't overrule a statute. So that was a prescription drug case. It was unpublished, but obviously when the trial court is looking ahead, that's where the good indication where the Court of Appeals would be. But that case relied on State v. Rothenberger in deciding in Pester that prescription drugs are certainly, in State v. Rothenberger, there was no test. It was a refusal case. However, the court recognized that certainly the police have the right to investigate DRE drugs that are suspected to be something other than these seven drugs in the administrative rules. Any drug really does mean any drug, and that these are valid chemical tests and that they can come into evidence. And certainly with Malone, which was decided earlier this year after the district court ruled in this case, I think Malone did close the door. Malone talked about other drugs and cutoff levels. Do we need cutoff levels for every possible drug or just the seven that are listed in the administrative rules? Malone said, we might need cutoff levels because they're listed in the administrative rules for those seven things, but for other drugs, we don't need them. And that's the better way to read the rule, and that's what this court said. And this case, Taylor case, is other drugs.
I assume your position is any drug is interpreted according to the plain and ordinary meaning of the term drug rather than being limited by what the HHS regulations say. Is that right?
Certainly, Your Honor. Yes. And basic rules of statutory interpretation have to apply. I mean, any drug isn't ambiguous. I mean, and the court has said.
So perhaps it's not as difficult in this case, but would there be cases where it's hard to define whether something is a drug or not?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because, well.
Caffeine?
In the sense that K2? It would have to fit.
Is K2 a drug?
K2?
Is K2 a drug?
K2 is a substance, certainly, that, and I mean, this court has held that, I mean, a drug recognition officer can testify that somebody's under the influence of a substance that's certainly not alcohol and that it's a drug. But the DRE program is limited to their categories of drugs. They don't.
What definition would you propose of any drug?
Well, the court's already given us one. I mean, a drug is something that affects your ability to operate a motor vehicle safely. I mean, any substance, that's State v. Daly. That was many years ago, and the court said and accepted the DRE protocol and said that any substance you ingest into your body that makes you unable to drive a motor vehicle safely can be a drug for purposes of a drug recognition expert DRE case.
So it's an impairment question as opposed to what type of drug is causing the impairment.
Correct. And Daly was very clear to say the DRE, the officer that's trained and is testifying, that isn't worried so much about what particular drug it is. It might be K2, but it doesn't have to be. And that's inessential to the investigation. So the DRE officer is just going to opine that the driver was impaired and that it was a drug and not worry so much about the toxicology piece, because that's confirmatory only. It's unlike an alcohol.
So if you combine it, if you fall asleep while you're driving.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. If you fall asleep while you're driving and you have used a drug, you've shown the impairment piece. Is that correct?
Well, it could be, but in this case, it was more than him just falling asleep. I mean, he was hitting the curb multiple times, according to one officer. He was.
That happens when you fall asleep, right?
Absolutely. He was not in control of his vehicle, but it wasn't just because he fell asleep. So I suppose counsel's correct. You could just fall asleep because you're sleepy. But I mean, there's more to that in this case, and the facts in this case show that he was coming from his friend's house where he immediately fell asleep, and he'd been taking these drug medications, which he said were prescribed. There was no medical testimony in this case. No doctor actually testified to what he was supposed to be taking or how he was supposed to be taking them. But even at face value, if he was taking them as prescribed, he brought a big medication bag with him to court, and it was never offered into evidence, but he said, here's my medication and I'm not taking these anymore because I don't want to be convicted of DUI again. But in any event, I mean, there's no question he's taking several medications, at least one of which was a CNS depressant. That was the category of drug that the drug recognition officer believed him to be under the influence of, and it's the opinion of the DRE that matters. It's not the toxicology piece.
A trier of fact could determine that someone who had taken a drug and fell asleep and experienced erratic driving while falling asleep and waking was not under the influence of the drug.
Certainly. And
I mean, it's really a question of fact.
Sure.
For the trier of fact.
Of course.
Causal relationship.
Absolutely, and you can't reweigh the facts here. Certainly, the trial court had the opportunity to see and hear the evidence and weigh those factors and all the evidence involved. So, absolutely, it's a weight evidence is certainly for the trial fact. Absolutely. So,
going back to the law, what do we know about the Department of Health and Human Services regulations? Where did they come up with these?
Well, they were mandated to have regulations to give us a method of testing. So a method is the only reason to have Title 177 is to give us a method for testing. So the DRE program exists. It's a worldwide certification process. This has nothing to do with the administrative rules in Nebraska for method of testing. So to get rid of 177, we still have a drug recognition expert program. The only reason 177 exists is to give us the method, the the principle of analysis. And there's one method of testing in Nebraska that's been approved, and that's infrared or gas chromatography mass spectrum. And that's the, that was what was used in this case. So that's the method of testing. So to go beyond that is to go beyond what the regulations are designed for in the first place. So, in any event, and I did brief, some of the specific objections, evidentiary type objections, but I think it's also important to notice that some of the objections to exhibits in this case were not ruled upon by the district court. The district court did not believe those particular, objections were, assigned properly and argued properly. So the court specifically did not rule. There was no, petition to review that ruling. That's not an assignment of error here.
What do you understand the assignments of error here to be?
Well, and I think the assignments as stated were problematic. I briefed that as well. I think these are too general. It's not really telling us what's going on, but from the argument, it's very clear that the only real assignment of error, and I suppose perhaps he could argue sufficiency, although I think sufficiency was plenty here. I think the court can restate the argument into an assignment of error on the 7 drug issue and get to a decision that perhaps at least not so much extend, but at least clarify the Rothenberger Malone decisions into a decision like the Court of Appeals did in State v. Pester that was an unpublished opinion, because that's the only place to go with this unless this court disagrees with its own ruling in Malone dealing with these other drugs. I mean, if there's not other drugs to deal with, then, you know, Malone doesn't make any sense. And Rothenberger certainly recognized that they knew going in it wasn't one of the 7. And they, obviously the police have a right and the authority to investigate a drug impaired driver under any circumstances. So my time's up and I'm happy to answer more questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? We have no time for rebuttal. Counsel, again, thank you very much for being here today. The court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Continental Resource versus Fair. Both sides have 15 minutes for this particular argument.